In an empire where Congress knows nothing, the ubiquitous DC think tank is all. And the Israel lobby and their neocon allies must own a dozen. Well, Americans have a lobby in Washington, too. It's called the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. They advocate for us on Capitol Hill. Join CNI to demand an end to the U.S.-sponsored occupation of the Palestinians and an end to our government's destructive empire in the Middle East. That's the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey, everybody. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. If you're like me, then you're right all the time, surrounded by people in desperate need of correction. Well, we can't all have a radio show, but we can all get anti-government propaganda to stick on the back of our trucks. Check out LibertyStickers.com. Categories include anti-war, empire, police state, libertarian, Ron Paul, gun rights, founders quotes, and of course, the stupid election. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. After the show, you should check out one of my sponsors, WallStreetWindow.com. It's a financial blog written by Mike Swanson, a former hedge fund manager who's investing in commodities, mining stocks, and European markets. Mike's site, WallStreetWindow.com, is unique in that he shows people what he's really investing in, updating you when he buys or sells in his main account. Mike's betting his positions are going to go up due to the Federal Reserve printing all that money to finance the deficit. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. And if you'd like to sponsor the show too, let me know at Scott@ScottHorton.org. Our next guest on the show today is Dennis Marburger. And he's working with the 10th Amendment Center and the Campaign for Liberty. And this group in his county in Michigan, their chapter, I guess, of People Against the NDAA. I didn't even know there was such a thing as People Against the NDAA. Welcome back to the show. Dennis, how are you doing, man?
Hey, Scott, I'm doing great. Thank you very much for inviting me to be on.
Well, I really appreciate you joining us. A longtime friend of the show, of course, known as Haji in the chat room much of the time. In fact, please go back to the archives and search for his name, Dennis Marburger, and you'll find where he sort of helped guest interview someone on the Armenian-Azerbaijani conflict, I think it was, back a while ago. Right, wasn't it?
Yes, it was Dr. Arasanjian from the University of Michigan, Dearborn.
There you go.
And that was a great interview. And by the way, Azerbaijan is back up in the news, as you probably saw over at antiwar.com the other day.
I did see that. You know what? Maybe we can talk about that. I'm going to write down a little bit of a note because that's an extremely important story about a country that nobody even knows where it is and that kind of thing. But, well, that's why it's extra interesting to me. And, of course, it's extremely important, matters of the biggest wars and peace at stake. But anyway, so let's talk about People Against the NDAA. First, very quickly, tell us about the NDAA, and then secondly, tell us about the people against it.
Okay, Scott, yeah, well, the NDAA is the National Defense Authorization Act, and they pass one every year, but the 2012 version, and apparently the 2013 version that's now up for consideration, contains some very onerous and horrible provisions. In the 2012 version, they were known as Sections 1021 and 1022, which together, essentially, with the way they've changed the wording, opens up the gates wide open for the executive branch and any bureaucrats working in conjunction with the executive branch to essentially use the military at their discretion to arrest Americans, hold them indefinitely without the right to speedy and public trial, and either have people disappeared in this country, or even rendered overseas to one of the torture dungeons overseas. And so it's really a horrible thing. I mean, we had counted up in working on this that it had about around 20 constitutional violations, and that's even before we get to the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. And that's between the our state constitution and the Constitution for the United States. So it's really awful on many levels.
Hey, you know what? Let me stop you right there. I'm sorry too, but it's such an important point, I think. And you know, it's hard because a lot of times we have these conversations on a level where you can't go over every single thing in order to get to the new point. But the truth of the matter is, you have a lot of grown adults who know a lot of things about a lot of things, but really who don't know anything about the Constitution or couldn't even begin to name the parts of the Constitution that the NDAA violate. Could you explain a little bit I think it can really help fill in the gap of people's understanding about, you know, as bad as the Constitution is for creating this government, at least it had some pretty good restrictions there in Article 1, Section 9 and in the Bill of Rights.
Oh, well, there you go, Scott. Not surprisingly, you zeroed in on it. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2's right to seek a writ of habeas corpus. There's the First Amendment's right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That goes out the window with this. The Fourth Amendment's right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. The Fifth Amendment's right to be free from charge for an infamous or capital crime until presentment or indictment by a grand jury. Also in the Fifth Amendment, the right to be free from deprivation of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. In the Sixth Amendment, the right in criminal prosecutions to enjoy a speedy trial by an impartial jury in the state and district where the crime shall have been committed. Also in the Sixth Amendment, the right to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation. The right to confront witnesses, the right to counsel. In the Eighth Amendment, the right to be free from excessive bail and fines and cruel and unusual punishment. The 14th Amendment, right to be free from deprivation of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. I also like to bring up the Ninth Amendment and the 10th Amendment here for a couple of reasons. One is the Ninth Amendment says all the rights that we had that were granted by the Creator before the government was formed and for which and for whose protection the government was supposed to be formed are not sacrificed or limited by the document known as the Constitution for the United States. And then, of course, the 10th Amendment with the idea that any rights not expressly delegated to the feds are reserved for the states and or the people, that sort of thing. And so it comes to follow those as well. And then we had a bunch of things in the Michigan Constitution we found that it also violated those. And that's true for, I think, for most, if not all, the state constitutions where there are numerous.
Boy, that is quite a litany, I got to tell you, Dennis. You know, the thing is, I mean, basically what it sounds like is a screaming lunatic on the street corner in Los Angeles somewhere yelling that this is the end of America forever. In this case, this is not hyperbole at all. I mean, this is really one of these, a giant spike in our coffin. No nail. It's like a railroad spike in our coffin.
Yeah, and it's not even a golden one, of course. But I have to give credit here. I think you may know Blake Filippi from the Rhode Island Liberty Coalition and also 10th Amendment Center, and he did an excellent job drafting up this document, which lists a lot of these things in here.
Mm-hmm.
And so Blake deserves credit for that. But it truly is as draconian and as onerous as you suggest. The problem isn't, of course, that people are overreacting. If anything, we're too somnolent. There's not enough information in the media about this. There are some nascent movements to fight back, and I'm really glad that you were concerned enough because you have a lot of credibility. You've always been a voice of moral clarity on these things, and so I'm glad that you're giving some time on your program for us to get the word out.
Oh, it's just amazing to me that this can happen with, you know, see, I don't know. I'm so jaded and cynical now that I always, you know, say it's just a shrug, but the truth is there are a lot of people who are really upset about this. There are a lot of people who see it for what it is and want to find a way to stop it, want to do something. I mean, damn, man, you're going to go ahead and just, I mean, did you guys hear the list of parts of the Constitution, the protections of the Constitution eviscerated by this thing? The power of the president to put your kid sister in military prison if he feels like it. And no court can review it. You know, literally, martial law. In effect, de facto, a general warrant on us all, basically. A general arrest warrant on us all with the military power, with the war power. It's absolutely as far out of control as it could possibly be. And so here, it looks like, you know, the Ron Paulians are saying, hey, we need something to do now that we're all friends and like doing stuff. So you guys came up with this thing, and it's, as you said, the 10th Amendment Center, of course, is working really hard on this. And you've got this thing, People Against the NDAA. And now, is this just a Michigan thing, or this is already nationwide? You're the chapter leader of your county, is that correct?
Well, in Bloomfield Township, Bloomfield Hills, area, I'm the chapter leader. And Scott, this is a great story, and I'm glad we're able to bring this up. There are a number of groups that are fighting against this, and People Against the NDAA, or PANDA, as it's known, was started by a college student down the road from us in Bowling Green, Ohio. His name is Dan Johnson. And Dan is a very dynamic and knowledgeable and committed to the cause of liberty young man. He's a sophomore college student at Bowling Green. He's 19. He's put together this group, and again, there's a whole lot of them that are fighting against it. I want to say that one of the great things Dan has done, he's working on building coalitions, and we're doing that too. So yes, all the people who are concerned about life, liberty, and property, personal liberty and personal responsibility, are getting involved in this. So that is, of course, the Ron Paul community, following his greatest speaking tour in the history of liberty and freedom, as you called it. But we're also working with people of other political persuasions. And what we're finding is, as people become aware of all these onerous provisions, and as they become aware of all the changes in definitions, so that under the NDAA, if you are, somebody says, well, that person gave substantial support, undefined, to the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, or an associated group undefined, or committed a belligerent act, undefined, against the United States, or a coalition partner. And heck, those change all the time, don't they, Scott? Or you know.
Yeah, and as asserted by some Smithers of some Smithers that works for Obama, that nobody even knows and has no accountability whatsoever.
That's right. It's really outrageous. But so we have these various groups that are working on this. We're with the 10th Amendment Center, Campaign for Liberty, the Downsize D.C., Bill of Rights Defense Committee, and People Against the NDAA, and where young Dan Johnson has really put together, I think, a very effective group, networking. I encourage everyone to investigate these groups and to join up and at People Against the NDAA. They're growing now, and if you go like them on Facebook, that would be good. But Dan's doing some tremendous work. He's put together some great resources, and we're working around the country, as I say, in conjunction with the other groups and like with the 10th Amendment Center. And so I bring up 10th Amendment because we're utilizing, and you've heard this because you've heard Tom Woods, he wrote the book, and you've heard, I'm sure, Michael Bolden and all the others explain this really wonderful concept and reality, which is Thomas Jefferson's rightful remedy. When the people for whom these restrictions were written, that would be what they called back then the general government, that branch of the federal government, because it was supposed to be all federal, right? A constitutionally limited federal republic, that's the idea here. When those people outside of the law, outside of the restrictions that are put on them, and those, when they do that, then their creator, their bosses, who are supposed to be the state, you see that the general branch of the government is the agent of the states, and the states were the agents of the people. And so the idea here is that Jefferson and Madison and Patrick Henry and I think even Hamilton and Marshall actually expressed was this idea that if something is outside the bounds of that Constitution, in terms of a law or executive edict or anything, it is not a law, it is null and void, it is of no effect. And so what did the state, so what do we do to fight back against it? As Tom Woods wrote it, we utilize nullification as our tool against tyranny. And they did that in 1798. To protect freedom of speech. When President John Adams started to take it away with the Alien and Sedition Acts, and Jefferson went off to Kentucky and wrote the Kentucky Resolves, and Madison went to Virginia and wrote the Virginia Resolves, and Jefferson eventually came up with the word nullification to nullify what the feds are doing. And one way to look at it is that we're nullifying the nullifier, somebody wrote. I don't remember if that was Michael Meharry or who wrote that, but it was a great point. That's what we're doing. And then Madison said interposition. So the local or state unit would interpose between the people and the usurpers from the national capital. And so that's what we're working on here, Scott. And so there are both county resolutions that we're working with, and also there are resolutions that are going forward in municipalities, and then at the state level. And you may have heard both Virginia and Arizona have passed non-compliance with NDAA bills. In Virginia, eventually, the governor of Virginia did sign the bill, which is a wonderful thing. In Arizona, Governor Brewer, unfortunately, vetoed it. I've heard it was because of heavy pressure from Senator John McCain, if you could believe such a thing.
Yeah, of course he does. Well, vetoes can be overridden, can't they? Now, I got to tell you, well, just you on behalf of all these other people, too, how proud I am of you guys, because this is not, you know, the local Republican parties as taken over by Ron Paul people, even. These are just, you know, basically just libertarian groups banding together and having an incredible amount of influence over these politicians in these parties that your groups are not necessarily connected to. And, you know, the thing about this is, even my statement about how crazy screaming guy on the sidewalk hyperbole actually rings true in this case or whatever, that kind of hyperbole really scares the hell out of people to even say that. And really what we need here more than anything is exactly somebody like you going up there with that most professional and educated attitude and not being alarmist in manner or tone at all, and yet somehow really being able to get through into the brains of these ridiculous political, you know, politician types, just how serious this is. That, you know what, this is one where you really absolutely have to take a stand, because we might not get back from this kind of thing. And so that's a very careful balance to strike. I think, you know, you set a great example of how to do that. And apparently, you know, your these affiliated groups of yours, too, have already done an incredible amount of good. Can you give us, like, a basic ballpark estimate, how many different counties and municipalities and jurisdictions up there in Michigan you've already brought on board for this? Because, again, to me, not again, for the first time, I should say, as a premise to my question, to me, a politician, usually especially like a city or a county politician type, they're totally just airhead, poser, local, celebrity type people that really don't know anything about anything. You know what I mean? And so to be convinced to how dangerous something like this is, to appeal to their sense of real knowledge or wisdom is just, you know, that dog doesn't even hunt because they don't have any. So, you know, how you've persuaded them to me is a very interesting topic.
Well, thanks, Scott. Well, first I have to say, again, an encouraging note through this has been the development and the uncovering of more and more people who, once they hear it and they read about it, they say, hey, this bothers me too. And they really want to fight back against it. And it's very pleasing to see the number of folks who, on this issue and other things, particularly related to decentralization of government, you know, that we talk about in at the 10th Amendment Center and those good fellows over at the Forgotten Men show and Facebook page and all these and founders of the American Revolution, with Johnny Law and all the gang. And we're finding so many people, even that may not have been with us for Dr. Paul, that are saying, hey, we're seeing it on these issues where, hey, we agree on this and we agree on that. So we're just, again, building the coalitions. And we found here locally in Michigan, we got over in Allegan County, a county commissioner named Bill Sage. And it was kind of an interesting story. I was at a state convention as a Ron Paul delegate. It was in May, and Bill was there, and he's been working on something called Constituting Michigan and also Constituting America. His idea is that we need to teach the principles of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers and all those sort of things in the schools, all right? Well, I saw Bill there, and we were chatting, and I brought up about 10th Amendment Center. I said, what do you think about that? And he goes, oh, yeah. I brought up NDAA, and he was very interested, and he's been a real dynamo. So we went to his county, Allegan County, which is between Grand Rapids and Kalamazoo, and I drove out there a couple of times, and Bill organized and got together a bunch of the folks, and he did some great work coming up with his resolution, and as a county commissioner, he said, we have to do this, and at the second meeting, we were able to get it through on an 8-3 vote in Allegan County, which is the first one in Michigan, and I believe it's the 16th or 17th situation in the country where we've had the success. We are working on my own county here with the commissioners there, Oakland County, and we have a really outstanding county commissioner from the White Lake area named Jim Runstad, and Jim is championing this for us in Oakland County. And we've had a couple of general county commissioner meetings. We've had a whole bunch of folks that have gone out there and spoken and explained what's going on and expressed what we needed to be done. It's gone to committee because that's their procedure. Then it goes to a committee. And so on the 24th of September, we had a committee meeting, and I think we had like 25 or 30 folks that showed up to speak in defense of this, or in support of Jim's resolution and explain just how bad this was. Blake Filippi from 10th Amendment Center was on the phone. That was great. And now, I should say, at that meeting, here's something I thought as I listened to your earlier interview with Mr. Hagan and what you mentioned earlier. There was a county commissioner, and this to me was very disappointing and astounding in a certain way, if this person had been paying attention to what's been going on in terms of the fight for liberty and how it's, you know, particularly among Ron Paulians. I mean, sometimes people in the Republican Party think we talk about it too much. Well, this guy dared to say that we were bringing this up. He thought, well, it sounds like a partisan political ploy. And I thought of all the rotten things and so demonstrably untrue. And we're looking forward to the next meeting, which is coming up on October 8th, which is this next Monday, to explain to him the error of his thinking in that. And I think Commissioner Runstad did a good job of pointing this out. It's about principles. And like you were saying in the earlier interview, we're not talking about we're not letting any party off the hook or any politicians get away with anything or attacking anybody unfairly. We're just saying, hey, it's not personal. It's philosophical. And so we're working hard on that. But so we're working on Oakland County. We have other counties. Berrien County, which is right in the southwest corner of the state, they're looking at this. A good fellow named Ray Kirkus is championing it there, and I think Bill's going to help them over there. We have other counties in the state. In fact, we had two sheriffs who showed up one of whom showed up in Allegan County for the second meeting, Sheriff Dar Leaf of Berry County, which is between Grand Rapids and Lansing, I think. And there was also, so he spoke spoke passionately, and he, along with Sheriff Raines from Eaton County, have both been to Sheriff Mack's Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association meeting out in Las Vegas. And Sheriff Leet really understood this and really helped us to, helped to hammer home the point that the county sheriff is so important. We need the local law enforcement. We need to have it decentralized, and the sheriff is the protector of the people. And so what we've been emphasizing in all these meetings, and Sheriff Leet did a great job in Allegan County, is that we want our local government to be our shield, not the tip of Leviathan spear. And we're saying the same thing at the state level. On the 25th, the day after the county meeting, last county meeting, we went up to the Michigan legislature, and at the Oversight, Reform, and Ethics Committee, chaired by Tom McMillan, who's a state rep from Auburn Hills and who's done a lot of great work, he had a meeting. And Justin Amash, you know, who's been really heroic on this, Scott, Justin Amash was there, and he spoke and explained what was really at stake and what was going on. And then Congressman Amash was joined by a lady named Shelley Weisberg, and she's the legislative director for the ACLU here in this state. So, again, the coalition you see coming together. And then we had Tom McMillan estimated over, excuse me, 40
people. Well,
wait,
hold that point
there
for just a second. I wanted to highlight that. The lady from the ACLU came, and now are they officially part of y'all's coalition? You're working with them?
At the state level, definitely, yes.
Because that's an extremely important thing, that because obviously that's more the left, and you guys gotta get the Center for Constitutional Rights and all them working on your coalition too. That way, everybody can say a broad coalition.
Well, you're right. In fact, a former high school classmate of mine is a state rep. She's from Farmington Hills, Vicki Barnett. She's a Democrat, and Vicki and Tom and myself would probably vote differently on a number of different things. But I've talked to her, and she agrees that this is really important, and I'm glad that we have her support on this too. So, like I say, it's bipartisan, transpartisan, it's even nonpartisan. The whole point is it's an American issue, not a partisan issue. But Representative McMillan's meeting, I thought went well. There's going to be another committee meeting. We need everybody on deck. We need every man, and we need every woman, all the sons of liberty and all the daughters of liberty to come together and help us accomplish this. Because as you point out, if we can't win this one, this is the final line in the sand. You look at the national surveillance state. You look at all the this is the NDA. All the administrative detentions that are going on. All the spying they're doing on us. All the depredations of our economic liberties. The destruction of the savers in this country. And all the wars they're creating. All the danger they're putting us at. Yeah, just like these journalists said. You know, the Freedom 7. Scott, of course, I know you're familiar with that. The Chris Hedges and Naomi Wolf. I think Daniel Ellsberg and that group. They went in there and they said,
"Of course,
hey,
yeah,
yeah." You know, are we safe if we just do investigative journalism to get information out to the American people? Now, in a free country, there's personal privacy, right? And there's government transparency. At least that's the concept, that's the theory. What we have in this country now is, it's Jagger said, it's all secrecy and no privacy. We got plenty of the war on whistleblowers by Obama, like Glenn Greenwald points out. And these journalists were saying, hey, are we going to be safe? Five times Judge Forrest asked the government attorneys, would they be safe under the with their First Amendment protection for practicing their craft and giving the knowledge to the American people that they need to make decisions at election time and stuff like that, you see? And never would the government attorneys affirm or deny. They just would left it wide open. And she said, there are so many things here that are so vague, no specificity. Everybody's at risk. It's just at the whim of a would-be dictator, and that's not the way it's supposed to be, and that makes it just on that outside the law, plus of all the other problems that we mentioned earlier. So, of course, she issued a temporary injunction. She then said, give me definitions for these things that you say would get somebody afoul of the government in this legislation. They couldn't do that, or they wouldn't do it. And she said, well, that's it, permanent injunction. Now, Obama had said, and remember, he signed this on New Year's Eve, which seems like kind of a significant date, doesn't it, Scott, because we're all out partying allegedly or whatever, so he's doing it when people are not paying attention. But he signed this. He said, I'm not going to use these powers, but he immediately appealed. And he got a temporary stay on the 225th anniversary of Constitution Day, if you can believe it.
Yeah.
And so the fight goes on, Scott. State and local resistance, because as the Forgotten Men say, you can't trust the deceivers. There's a bunch of deceivers in power. Yeah. And as the 10th Amendment Center says, you cannot correct the errors of the general government by utilizing them. And as Woods and others have written, we all have read all this stuff, and you've talked about it, and you've had a lot of people on here. We have a great group coming together that all realize this.
Yeah. Well, you know, another important point here is for my listeners to remember to not listen to me when I'm talking about how nobody cares all the time. Because just because that's how I feel doesn't mean it's true at all. And the fact that you guys are even listening is proof of that. And the things that you do, you know, obviously. So I'm sorry for being such a downer all the time and saying no one cares, because You know, just look at how powerful it can be if people just get together and they stay single-minded and determined on their highest priority like this. They can get a hell of a lot done. You guys are doing it right in front of my eyes, thank you. I appreciate your efforts on my behalf. Now I gotta go because it's Ray McGovern's turn. But thanks so much for your time on the show and all your great efforts. Quickly tell everyone websites that they ought to look at for this effort to nullify the NDAA.
Right. It would be WatethAmendmentCenter.com would be one. People Against the NDAA.com. It's also known as Panda. That would be a great one. Campaign for Liberty's got some good work on this at their websites. Downsize DC has stuff on this. Bill of Rights Defense Committee. I think all of those are things that I would advocate that people look at. And you go on Facebook, you can find these things. And there's some tremendous work going on against this. There's also a Facebook group. I think it's 1 billion against indefinite detention done by the NDAA. So there are a lot of different groups. But People Against the NDAA and 10th Amendment Center and all these others are doing phenomenal work.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Good talk to you.
You're welcome, Scott. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, y'all. We'll be right back after this. The Scott Horton Show is brought to you by the Future Freedom Foundation at FFF.org. Join the great Jacob Hornberger and some of the best writers in the libertarian movement like James Bovard, Sheldon Richman, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and more for a real individualist take on the most important matters of peace, liberty, and prosperity in our society. That's the Future Freedom Foundation at FFF.org. Hey ladies, Scott Horton here. If you would like truly youthful, healthy, and healthy-looking skin, there is one very special company you need to visit, Dagny & Lane at DagnyAndLane.com. Dagny & Lane has revolutionized the industry with a full line of products made from organic and all-natural ingredients that penetrate deeply with nutrient-rich ionic minerals and antioxidants for healthy and beautiful skin. That's Dagny & Lane at DagnyAndLane.com. And for a limited time, add promo code SCOTT15 at checkout for a 15% discount. Hey y'all, Scott here. As you know, I've been laid off from Antiwar.com, and I've embarked on a mission to make this show into a real business. And as you can tell, I've been doing all right at lining up some sponsors, and some great ones at that. But it isn't enough, so the perpetual fund drive rolls on. The Scott Horton Show needs donors. Needs donors and more advertisers if the show is to outlast my meager savings. So please, stop by scotthorton.org/donate. You can make single donations or sign up for a monthly subscription with PayPal. You don't need an account with them to do so. Or use Google Wallet, WePay.com, Give.org, and now even accepting Bitcoins. And if you own or represent a company or organization interested in sponsoring the show, please email scott@scotthorton.org so we can work it out. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And thanks.